The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians lose respect for people simply because they do not conceive of God exactly as he's portrayed in the Bible. Well, actually, that's a false stereotype. Not true of most Christians. Certainly, it's true of some Christians, even many Christians, but not most Christians. For me personally, believing firmly that something is true does not mean I cannot respect somebody who disagrees. As a matter of fact, I have a friend and colleague that I'm going to introduce you to today, another radio talk show host named Tony Venuti, who views God differently than I do. But when it comes to politics and values, Tony and I are right on the same page. Tony Venuti hosts an internet radio show, and he's very candid about something, and he'll tell you more about it, about the fact that he's actually an ex-con, released from prison in 1985. Shortly after that, he developed Arizona Tourist News, and these days, the Tony Venuti Show can be followed as a podcast, Monday through Friday from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Tony Venuti, welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob, what a wonderful introduction, and I'm sort of jealous. I need a producer. You should write for me. You're good. Very good. You know what? You're right on the money.
Well,
it's all about goodness, isn't it?
Yeah,
when
well, listen.
Right, when you get right down to it, it's about goodness against, you know, virtue versus evil. It's like, which is the home team, virtue or evil? And these days, I'm wondering.
Well, you have a very interesting story, Tony. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to the values you have now and the radio show you have now.
Well, you know, I'm sort of like the sponge from the 1950s, experiencing the culture shock, as it were, having come from a working-class family, you know, not a middle-class family, a working-class family, and understand I make a distinction between working-class family and the low-class that's never spoke of. The low-class has to exist. It's what gives us cause to seek a higher order, but the low-class is where all those who are enabled, all those who are on welfare, all those gaming the system, all of those got one foot in crime on a regular course. I came from a working class family. My mother, union, the whole bit, rough life, brought on the right side of town, brought to Massachusetts outside of Boston. Had some interesting experiences growing up in the 50s or the 60s because I lived where the attorneys and the doctors and the judges, the political elite lived in this working class town, Brockton, Massachusetts, the shoe city capital of the world at the time of the 50s. And of course, Brockton, Mass was home to Rocky Marciano and Marvin Hagler, from which both of those people I have a sort of slice of personal relationship with. But that notwithstanding, I know the culture. I grew up in the 60s. In the 50s and the early 60s, we thought of the 1920s. We thought of the roaring 20s, Bob. It's like, wow, man. Ooh-wee. What a life that must have been. Well, we didn't know it was coming.
Yeah, no.
We didn't know it was coming, did we?
Right, right. Because the roaring 20s were followed by the Great Depression.
Right. Now, meanwhile, I'm playing the party boy. You know, I'm going to school. I don't have too many. You know, I'm a happy kid, but I'm living a hard life. My father divorced. He was a nutcase. Bottom line, my mother's bringing up. Right now, two of my brothers are dead. One died of a drug overdose, and one's going to die in prison, and he's in Florence, Arizona.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's what it is. At any rate, and I appreciate that. A friend of mine said that is one of the three blessings that really happened to me. My mother, my life of 25 years, not my wife, a life that tends to last longer. That's my sarcastic take. to the reality. That is, I'm committed to her because marriage these days, till death do us part. It's like, whose death are they talking about?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so let's be real about it. She's my life. I've committed, you know, I'm with her for life. And my dear friend, who's been since a mentor, that when I first was released from prison for the last time, spending, oh, I'd say 15 years in and out of a dozen. And see, that's what people say to me, what's that, your resume? And I say, yes, idiot. Yes, that's precisely my resume, because it's counterintuitive to the message I want to have you learn, okay?
Now, how did you end up in prison? What was your actual...
Well, here's the thing. I started school when I was 5. I couldn't drive, couldn't get a license, so I started stealing cars just as joyrides, okay? So now I'm in the system, aren't I? I'm in the system. And then the drugs kicked in, and then I went into the Army, and now I'm hooked on heroin as I'm in Vietnam. You know, world-class, AAA, the best heroin in the world. I was on that thing for about 7 to 10 years before I went into higher drugs like cocaine and so forth. But all my criminal history was in and out of drug-related, what you might say is gateway crimes, etc.
And was it while you were in prison that you started thinking differently about things, or was it after you got released?
No, I always knew what I was doing was wrong. Matter of fact, the authorities really had a hard time with me because my mother taught me respect.
And so you were respectful to your authorities, and your authorities in prison found you surprisingly respectful?
Exactly. I was kind of intuitive. As a matter of fact, after one psychological test, when we were doing intake at a prison in Nebraska, and when I think I was about 28 years old at the time, a three-time loser was an apprentice. I mean, just a small-time street criminal that was living in the low class. Okay, that's where I'm going with that. I was living at that time in the low class. And there's a lot of people in the low class. I bet you the 10 or 15% of society are living in the low class. I bet you another 25% are living in the working class. Forget anything about the middle class. So I'm big into this mythology, the way we frame our reality. It all comes down to the fact that, you know what, anybody can be any way they want to be, in my estimation, Bob, as long as they cop to it, because we're imperfect human beings, aren't we? Isn't that what makes us perfect? After all, it's our imperfection. And the understanding that when we're not perfect, we have someone to answer to that's greater than ourselves.
That's right. A person who thinks they're perfect.
Natural law. I find that verse behind natural law.
Right. Now, let's see. So tell us a little bit about your radio show today, Tony. Tell us, I mean, I was a guest last week, so I know about it, but our listening audience that does not know.
Well, thank you very much for that, Bob. I've been doing this for about 3 years, since June 2008. And now currently it's 1 to 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Now, this is an internet show. How does that work? I know internet shows are kind of new the last few years. How do you keep track of your audience? Do you know how many people follow your show over the internet?
Yes, I do. Anywhere from 100 to 1,000 a day. We do get records on it. But, you know, I've never believed all of this digital technology in terms of the numbers, because you see different stats for different reasons.
Right. But it is done as a live podcast, correct?
Yes. And you're able to participate in a chat room if you want to, if you wish to.
Okay. Why don't you tell our audience how they could find your show? What's your exact, what exact website should they go to?
Sure.
If they want to follow your show.
blogtalkradio.com /Tony-Venuti, V as in Victor, E-N-U-T-I.
Okay.
And you can catch my archives anytime.
So they can go to the archives anytime, but they could also listen in live and call in your show while they're listening?
Yeah. The call-in number is 347-677-1563. And a lot of times people will call in just to listen on the phone. They'll put the speakerphone on, and there you have it.
Oh, is that because their computer's not working, or what?
Well, they may not use a computer. They might be at a phone for some reason.
Okay, and so they could just call in and listen. That's a toll-free number, I take it.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned it's Eastern time for your show, but you live in Arizona. So how did that work out? You have a studio in Arizona that carries you over to the Eastern station?
Well, the thing about the internet, you're talking about the internet radio dynamic here now in terms of the broadcastability, where I am and who reaches me where.
Right.
Yeah, I have listeners to this day. About 50% of my listeners listen to me often. Often they come back. I mean, I talk about I am my audience, that which is attracted to you defines you. So, you know, when I was young, Bob, people thought I was strange, and I was glad. I mean, the waters are deep where we go. We talk about why people do what they do, and the essence of goodness as seen, in my estimation, as modeling behavior for a child. That's the way I wish to express how people should live, as if you are modeling behavior, that of a child, much like a responsible parent would. No matter how irresponsible that parent might lead a life, and don't talk to me about hypocrisy, we're talking about duality when that goes on. But the fact is, do as I say, not as I do, is very real and very valid, because I'm teaching you how to behave so that when you're of age, you can be responsible for yourself, take care of yourself, and not be a drain on society. That is my responsibility as a citizen moving forward. And to me, that's the nature of God, if I follow with that line of reasoning, Bob.
Right. So basically, your show is a show about conservative values, and you're challenging people to think outside the box a little bit.
You better believe it. Stop following what people are telling you to think. Stop reacting and start responding. Stop being a citizen and stop being a consumer. Stop buying what people are selling you to believe. Understand, you know, I just saw something on Facebook. One of my friends was posting. One of my friends' Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. Huh, Bob?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess anybody could friend you on Facebook pretty easily.
Right. You see, that's how I feel about art nowadays.
You're comparing art to Facebook?
Huh?
You're comparing art to Facebook?
Well, I'm saying along that same line, if everything is art, and these days almost anything that people go through pain with, that they express in a creative way, is now art, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. Oh, so I see what you're saying. And now everything is friends, too, because...
So exactly. So what I'm saying with that is, if everything is art, is anything art?
Let's put a hold on that, Tony. Hold with me over the break, and we'll be right back. My guest, Tony Venuti of the Internet Radio, Tony Venuti Show, we'll be right back.
This is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my guest, Tony Venuti. Tony, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Tony, we are. I know that you're on a cell phone, and we were hoping to get you on a landline. You weren't able to. I wanted to have you on for the whole show, but we're really having difficulty understanding you. Is there any way you could talk a little closer into your phone, or
Yeah, there is.
I'm going to have to make a judgment call. I want to keep you on as long as I can, but we are having some difficulty. And I understood you perfectly when I was on your show, but
yeah, and no worries. Let's do this.
Actually, you sound a little better even right now. So good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. But the whole thing I talked about is trying to modeling behavior, as if it was through the filter of a child's eyes. And you know, it's how our leadership that runs this country should be thinking as well. It's almost like people reject the idea intellectually that the government is to the citizenry, that is the child to the parents. Same kind of relationship. And some people reject that, even though I think thinkers don't, because if you just think about that poem, Captain, My Captain.
Oh, yeah, that they used a lot in the movie, Dead Poets Society.
Right. They're basically saying the captain is the one that once we give allegiance to, we look for him for guidance because we don't know any better. Well, that's the same way we view parents. That's the way society should view a parent's responsibility. And that should also be legitimately what a governing representative elected official should be behaving like, because after all, he's representing us through the power of our vote, not through his power of manipulation of gaining power, to which he no longer respects the vote.
Exactly. Tony, so, what is your political affiliation? You Republican or independent, or what's your...
Well, see, I hate that whole idea of a Republic. It should be conservative, right? I'm a conservative.
Okay, yeah.
Because
Republicans don't always behave in a conservative way.
Correct.
Okay, so you would call yourself a conservative first.
Democrats and this progressive Republicans.
But I would imagine as a conservative, if you have to choose between the Republicans and the Democrats, you're going to find the Republicans expressing it a little more closely.
You're correct. You can generalize in that abstract correctly that way, yeah. Everything
okay, now are there any of the, which of the Republican candidates that we have in the field right now do you favor, or if any?
Oh, all day long. The daddy of them all. The one that makes us feel the most secure. The one that makes us feel like, gee, that's my uncle. That's my learned, that's Newt. It's a Newt point, Bob.
So Newt is the one that you like right now?
Say what?
Did you say it's Newt Gingrich? That's the one that you like, or did I misunderstand you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's who I like.
Yeah, no, he's been doing very good in the debates. In fact, he just got endorsed by the one of the conservative newspapers in New Hampshire. I think that was just yesterday.
Right.
So
the union leader or something like that, right?
Now, how do you – he got into a little bit of trouble this week with his stance on illegal immigration. How did you process that whole thing?
He said a reasonable adult with courage would say that no one does say because they're more concerned with getting elected than doing what's right. They're more concerned with gaining their power than standing up behind a principle that needs to be spoken of. This is what I've been saying all along, that there's no way in... See, it's all about getting everybody ID'd first, Bob. This whole security issue... Common sense, and I got this on record with me saying that the first thing you do is you stop the bleeding. And then the second thing you do is get everybody ID'd.
Okay, now when you say the first thing you do is stop the bleeding, would you define that as completing the fence and securing the... You know, now that's part of the problem, because in the past when we've talked about comprehensive immigration reform, not all of it has sounded bad to me. I mean, they were talking about that as far back as Reagan's time, but the problem was they never really secured the borders. So I think it gets
exactly
difficult for
they
people.
Compromise. The Republicans compromised with promises of the Democrats. I remember Reagan when he did it in the 80s. I was in prison. I was in prison with people that were smuggling illegal aliens. I know the gig. And I've been watching it since the 50s. I mean, this has been this question for a long time. You know, we deported many people back from Mexico. And I think there was three major deportations that we did where tens of thousands were deported in an orderly fashion. But that being said, it's only logic that you're not going to be able to get everybody out. You're going to have to start the process by identifying the bad people. And the bad people are the ones that won't let themselves get ID'd, and the ones that when they do get ID'd, you find out who they are.
So then I guess you're taking Gingrich at his word. He says, this is not an amnesty. It's just a matter of getting everybody ID'd.
Well,
but
practical.
He claims he's not going to actually make them citizens. He's
practical.
Now, do you think that there should be some kind of at least fine or penalty? Or it does seem that people shouldn't get away scot-free for having come into our country illegally.
Right. Well, here's the deal. I think he was taught, no, I don't think, I know, I listened today, that his qualifications, they don't have citizen rights, they can't get welfare, they can't get any benefits. They're simply not illegal to be deported. They have nothing. They have no rights of a citizen. None. None. Zab nada. They're simply not deportable right now. Because the other rationale is, hey, man, you know what? We gave them the rational belief of a false sense of security, did we not?
Of course. I mean, they've had every reason to believe they're going to get away with coming into our country and staying here, of course.
Okay, so don't we, especially with people that have been playing the game for 20 years, don't we, at least in the eyes of God, say, you know what, everything being equal, this life, there's no such thing as perfection. You know, you just have to have the wisdom of, you know, you just have to have the the wisdom of the gods, man.
Yeah, I don't think I would have a tremendous problem with this if I knew we were going to secure the border and I knew they weren't going to get away scot-free without some kind of penalty.
Do you remember how tough Gingrich was when he was in the legislature? Do you know he was responsible for a good many things in Kansas?
Oh, yeah, no, and all the things that Clinton tried to grab credit for. Yeah, Clinton tried to grab credit for a lot of the things that Gingrich actually put in place.
So understand he's a leader that I can trust in doing what he says he's going to do.
Now, what do you think his chances are?
That we see in politics now, Bob, are busy doing one of two things. They're either telling you what they've done in the past or telling you what they're going to do in the future. But what they never tell you what they're going to do is what they're going to do now.
Now, that's interesting.
And what they're openly doing now is talking about what they're going to ask and what they're doing in the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I take it you don't have much love lost for our present administration, Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
The whole business is a farce. I mean, this guy is a plant. I really believe in those deeper-sided conspiracy theories, okay? Because I've been seeing it coming for all these years, the incrementalization. But I'll tell you what, how they were able to turn the car. This is like 10,000 spy novels squared. I won't even begin to ponder, except that, you know, don't ask me to prove it, even though I can tell you I know it. Because this is not a court of law, Bob. I'm a citizen just like you. We vote people in, we vote people out for what we believe we know. And if we're really good citizens, we understand the difference between not knowing, you know, and knowing that you know, and this business about thinking, you know. We're responsible behind that kind of thing. But one thing I know, just like my mother, when I was a kid, she knew I did something, but she didn't catch me doing it. And she looked at me and she said, don't you give me that. And I knew she knew. I just knew she knew. I said to myself, how does she know?
Yeah, now, unfortunately, Tony, most of our citizens don't have your kind of insight. I keep hearing people talk as if they're assuming Obama's not going to get reelected because the economy's so bad. But he had so many things against him for anybody who wanted to look at it before he got elected. It just seems to me that if this guy got elected once, he could get elected again.
Well, here's what makes it a moot point. You ready for this?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he will get elected again because the youngsters that all voted him in with this idea of hope and change have been severely disappointed by what they thought was going to actually benefit them directly. And, of course, all that Occupy Wall Street nonsense just proves it. And, of course, that's another whole story. That's another whole show. But these kids, and I say kids, quote-unquote, I don't care if they're 50 years old, these immature children who never voted or participated in the process are never going to go back to that.
Okay, hang with me, Tony. Hang with me over the next break.
Here's my second thought. Let me just give you this big time.
Okay,
relinquish power if and when he does lose.
Okay, hold with me over the break, Tony. Hold with me over the break. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with my guest, Tony Venuti. Tony, sorry to cut you off, but we do have to take these breaks when they come in. Are you there?
Oh, you bet you believe it. Hey, yeah, and no worries there, but what I was getting to was this notion of Obama not relinquishing power if and when he does lose.
Oh, you think he's going to lose and that he's not going to relinquish power? That's interesting.
Look at what he's done now. Look what he's done up to this point. Everything he said he was going to do, he hasn't. He's lied, cheated, and stealed all the way through. And if you think about when you box a predator in the corner that doesn't play fair, have you ever played with anyone that doesn't play fair?
Oh, well, we all have.
Okay, tell me when they start playing by the rules.
And then and then we ask them to play by the rules, and then sometimes they still don't.
Okay, exactly. So here we are playing by the rules. I used to think for years, many, many, many years ago, that would our system of checks and balances ever be put to the test. I always thought it was the media that would protect us, using Watergate as a justification for the actualization of somebody watching out for what otherwise would have been. But if I know now, if I knew then what I know now, I would never give the idea of Watergate being something that was otherwise. It would have never happened to a Democrat. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
So my point is, as I was thinking about could the idea of checks and balances ever be thwarted, haven't we got about five Watergates now in terms of legitimate reasons for what shouldn't be going on?
Right.
I mean, you're talking about Fast and Furious, you're talking about Cylindro. I mean, so many things, can't you?
Yep.
So that's where I'm at with that.
Okay, Tony. You a moment ago we were hearing you just fine. Try really hard to talk into your phone because you're fading now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better. Much better.
I gotta apologize. Okay, I'm really in a bad situation to talk. Can I say goodbye to you?
I'm sorry. What's that?
I'm in a really bad situation right now with this phone. It's not working really well for me. Can I say goodbye and I apologize?
We'll have you on again sometime, Tony, but I think we really need to put you on a landline. The cell phones are just too unstable.
I appreciate that, Bob.
Okay, well, listen, my friend, it was still good catching up with you, and God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, well, for those of you that were straining to hear that, it's a shame because he's a very interesting guy. I was a guest on his show, and of course, I was a guest by phone, but I could hear him just perfectly. But I've been talking to some people here in the studio, and we have been having difficulty understanding Tony. But what I'm going to do now, fortunately, I always have extra notes with me to improvise, especially when I know I'm talking to somebody on a cell phone because you never quite know how that's going to be. Last week, I began a discussion at the end of the class. We were looking at the first chapter of Matthew, which is a pretty fitting chapter around Christmas time with the birth of Jesus and all. And I talked about the fact that the genealogy in Matthew and the genealogy in Luke was different. When we look at the genealogy in Luke, it says Joseph. Now, of course, Joseph was the legal father of Jesus. I'm going to review a little bit from last week. He was the legal father of Jesus, the adoptive father of Jesus, but if you take the story literally, which I do, because I do believe God can do miracles, Mary was actually conceived because of the Holy Spirit, and Joseph was not really the physical father. Nevertheless, in the Hebrew culture, genealogies went through the man, so Luke says that Joseph is the son of Heli, and in Matthew, they say Joseph was the son of Jacob, so that looks like a contradiction. And then as you continue studying the rest of those genealogies, they're very different genealogies. So, of course, if you go to atheist websites or Bible skeptic websites. This makes their top 10. This is one of those things that clearly shows the Bible contradiction. It's not really a contradiction at all. Luke was given the genealogy of Jesus through his mother Mary. Matthew was given the genealogy of Jesus through his father Joseph. Now you say, well, Bob, but it doesn't say that. Luke doesn't say Mary. Luke says Joseph, because that's the way they would have written in ancient Judaism. Now, Luke was not a Jew, but he was familiar with that culture, and he was using Jewish genealogies. He was visiting Israel, and he was reporting as the Israelis would. In those days, if a man had a daughter and did not have a son, his son-in-law was considered his son, and the genealogy was written that way. So we would assume then that Heli was the father of Mary and that Joseph was Heli's father-in-law. Now, at this point, it just sounds like a speculation, but it's more than a speculation. I ended our show by telling you that there's another body of literature. It was oral in Jesus' day, but it's since been codified and written down. It's called the Talmud. The Talmud talks disparagingly about Jesus and disparagingly about Mary, and they call Mary the daughter of Heli. Isn't that interesting? When I listened to my show last week over the internet, I realized I said Mary the son of Heli. Well, I didn't want to stretch the point about son-in-laws that much. That was just a slip of the tongue, of which I now take full responsibility for. Mary was called the daughter of Heli in the Talmud. So when they call Joseph the son of Heli in the book of Luke, they mean Joseph the son-in-law of Heli. Well, now last week I told you that this explanation of the genealogies was very complicated. What you heard from me last week was not that complicated. I just repeated it to you. I don't think that was too complicated for you, was it? Well, the reason it didn't sound complicated, however, is that I didn't get a chance to finish last week. Now we're going to move on to the complicated part. And that is this: Jesus had to have been born of a virgin for these genealogies to work. In other words, the Messiah, which means anointed one, one sent from God, a deliverer of God's people. The Messiah predicted in the Old Testament a man who was going to come as a warrior and deliver the Jews from her enemies, but who was first going to die for the sins of Israel and the sins of the whole world and rise from the dead. This person had to be a descendant, a physical blood descendant of King David. But of course, David had many wives and many concubines, which were kind of a second-class citizen wife in those days. I've mentioned often on this radio show that the Bible is not a chauvinistic book, but the Bible does come out of a chauvinistic culture. And so David had many wives and many concubines. The Messiah had to be related to King David physically, but also had to be David's heir through the kingly line. David had many wives, so he had many sons. One of those sons was Solomon, and through Solomon, then Solomon's son was Rehoboam, and it goes on and on till we get to the Messiah. Jesus had to have been related that way. It wouldn't have worked if there wasn't a virgin birth, and I'll tell you why when we return.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Luke gives one genealogy of Jesus through his mother Mary. We already explained why that's true, even though Mary's name is not there, because your son-in-law could be considered your son if all you had was daughters in those days. And Matthew gives another genealogy. What's interesting is that both genealogies go through David. Now, when you look at Joseph's genealogy, the one that Matthew's talking about, Joseph was literally related to Jesus through the kingly line. Mary was also literally related to David, but not through the kingly line. Now, we always say Jesus was half Jewish on his mother's side. Mary was his literal blood mother. But because he was born of a virgin, Joseph was not his literal blood father. But since Joseph was his adoptive father, he would have all the legal rights to Joseph's heritage. Well, there's a problem. So the Jews for years know that the king, the Messiah, whenever he comes, is going to be related to David, and not just related to David, but through the kingly line. Well, one of the men who was related to David through the kingly line was a man named King Jeconiah. Some of your translations call him King Jehoiachin. This was the king that was ruling Israel right before the Babylonians conquered Israel. The Babylonians conquered Israel because Israel and her king, Jeconiah, were being disobedient. In fact, the prophet Jeremiah said that Jeconiah was so disobedient, he said, write this man off as childless. None of his descendants will ever sit on the throne. Okay, now, Jeconiah did have descendants, and those descendants continued all the way to the time of Joseph. But what that meant was any descendant of King Jeconiah does not qualify to be the Messiah. In fact, doesn't qualify to sit on a throne at all, let alone being the Messiah. Well, then we have a problem. The Messiah, if he's related to King Jeconiah, and being related to King Jeconiah is the only way his heritage is going to work itself back to King David through the kingly line, he's now caught by this King Jeconiah curse. Well, the virgin birth solves that problem. Jesus, as Messiah, is literally physically related to David, which he had to be, but through Mary, not through the kingly line. And then because Joseph was his adoptive father, he has all the legal rights and he has the legal heritage of the throne, but he's not physically related to David through the kingly line, which means he's not physically related to King Jeconiah through the kingly line, which means the King Jeconiah curse does not touch Jesus. And God got around this through the paradox of a virgin birth. So the next time your Jewish friends tell you, when I was in Israel, my tour guide said his main problem with Jesus was the virgin birth. I said, did you have a problem with the Red Sea? And I started mentioning all these miracles in the Old Testament. He didn't have a problem with any of them. I said, look, those things are every bit as incredible as the virgin birth. I mean, you know, when the Bible talks about miracles, they don't mean that God is ignoring science. It just means God knows a few things about science that we do not know yet. So that's the very interesting thing and very fitting for this Christmas season. The Messiah had to be born of a virgin. Now, another interesting thing was what they called a betrothal. We see that word. A betrothal is something we don't have in our culture. The best way to describe it is it's more than what we would call an engagement, but it's less than what we would call a marriage. Once a man and woman were pledged to each other and betrothed, the only way to get out of that was to actually go through a divorce. Now, can you imagine being Joseph and you're betrothed to this woman and she comes to you one day and she says, I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, but I'm pregnant. And honestly, I've been faithful to you. I haven't slept with anybody. In fact, an angel spoke to me and told me the Holy Spirit was going to conceive the baby. I mean, don't you think Joseph would say, excuse me, am I wearing a button on my shirt that says moron? But you know, Joseph had some integrity. It said he was going to put away his wife and divorce her privately. Now, again, or not wife, but he was going to divorce his betrothed. So, see, they were so connected that it was almost as if they were married, even though they had not been married. That says something about the integrity of Joseph. Another interesting thing about a betrothal is that they would be pledged, and then the husband would go away for a year, and he'd return. He'd have a second coming, and then he'd take the bride to his father's house. Now, the Bible uses all kinds of images about our relationship with Jesus. One is that Jesus is our older brother, and that God is our father. Another one is that Jesus is our master, we are his servants. Another one that I don't relate too well to as a man is that Jesus is the groom, and all Christians who make up the church are his bride. Of course, they don't mean a sexual thing there, but they're using it as an analogy. And Jesus said to his disciples, in my Father's mansion are many rooms. I will come back and prepare. I will go away. I will prepare a place for you. And then I will come back and I will take you there with me. And that's exactly what the groom would do. He'd make a pledge to this woman he was going to marry. He'd come back for her a year later. Also, you need to understand, in those days, if somebody was unfaithful, if they had sex outside of marriage, And that was found out. The person could actually be stoned to death under the law of Moses. Now, for the most part, the Romans wouldn't let the Jews execute capital punishment. If they'd been back in Israel before the Romans took over, that would happen. But sometimes a mob would get out of turn and get out of control. We saw that as when Jesus was a man. There was a woman that was caught in adultery, and the people dragged her out in the streets, and they were ready to stone her. And, of course, that might have been against the law to the Romans, but the Romans often looked the other way. They didn't necessarily care that much what the Jews did to themselves. So although it wasn't commonly practiced, this law anymore, it could have happened. And Joseph, who obviously did not believe her, was still a man of integrity. But that all changed, and he did finally believe her when he was spoken to in a dream. And in the dream, he was told that Mary was absolutely right. The Bible says a lot about dreams. This dream of Joseph's is not the only dream we read about in the Bible. And sometimes, a dream means nothing. Sometimes you've had a disturbing dream. And if you're a Christian, don't assume that every time you have a powerful dream, it came from God. It might have just been bad pizza from the night before. So sometimes a dream means nothing. However, the scriptures do talk a lot about dreams, and oftentimes a dream means a lot. In Acts chapter 2, 17 through 20, we're told that one of the things that will characterize the last days, and we've been living in the last days for the last 2,000 years. People always ask me, do you believe we're living in the end times? What they usually mean is, do you believe we're the last generation before Christ will return? I don't know if we're the last generation before Christ will return. I don't know when Jesus will return. The Bible tells us not to be concerned about that. He's definitely going to return. It may be in our generation, it may not be. But last days in the Bible doesn't mean last generation. It means last covenant, last agreement. In other words, we are living under an agreement where God's making a covenant with everybody in the world. In the Old Testament days, he was making a covenant only with the nation of Israel. And one of the conditions of this new covenant was that many people, not just prophets, but many people would prophesy and have visions and have dreams. So dreams were going to characterize even these last days. We see examples of dreams in the New Testament. We saw all kinds of them in the Old Testament. In Genesis 20, when Abraham and his wife Sarah were traveling into a foreign land, there was a king who he was afraid that people would look at Sarah and that they'd find her so beautiful that the minute they found out Abraham was her husband, they'd kill him off. So he lied and told Sarah to lie and say, pretend you're my sister. Well, that plan kind of backfired. So King Abimelech said, oh, well, if she's your sister, you won't mind if I take her to my harem, will you? And Abraham just made a real mess of things, but God bailed him out. And in a dream to King Abimelech, he said, let this woman go. And of course he did. We'll talk more about dreams when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our program. We're talking about the various and numerous times that they had dreams in the Bible. If every instance of God speaking to people through dreams in the Bible were removed, there'd be a lot of really famous Bible stories that we just wouldn't have. I mentioned a few of them before the break. There's also the Joseph of the Old Testament. We've been talking about the Joseph of the New Testament today. The Joseph of the Old Testament was given a dream. He was stupid enough to go and tell his brothers about the dream, and his brothers were in it. He says, hey, guys, I was the moon, and you were the stars, and you were bowing down to me. They said, oh, really, little brother? We have a dream of our own. Track with us. In our dream, you're naked and bleeding and lying in a pit and sold into slavery. That's our dream. So it didn't work out too well for Joseph. Of course, when he got to Egypt as a slave, later on, he interpreted the Pharaoh's dream. And God, through the Pharaoh, through Pharaoh being very grateful to having his dreams interpreted, especially since one predicted that a great famine would come upon the land, and Joseph included some advice on how to deal with this and start saving their grain so that other countries will come and buy grain from Egypt. He made Joseph second in command of all of Egypt. So a lot of good things also would not have happened without his dream. In the 28th chapter of Genesis, we have the famous dream of Jacob's ladder, where Jacob saw this stair. They call it a ladder. There's a nickname. What it really says in the Bible is a stairway leading up to heaven, and he saw angels there, and he went through a conversion experience. You know, Jacob, the name Jacob means cheat, and he was a cheater. He cheated his brother out of his birthright. Jacob's name after this dream was changed to Israel, which means he struggles with God and prevails. And he had 12 sons, which became the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. So that's a very significant thing that happened as a result of a dream. It was through a dream that Peter, Jewish man, was told that the gospel was for the Gentiles. Gospel means good news, the good news that the Messiah has come, but he's died not just for the selfishness of Israel, but the sins of everybody in the world. And there's no way Peter would have ever conceived in a million years that the gospel was for Gentiles if God had not given him a dream. Now, what are the reasons for dreams? Couldn't God speak in other ways? Well, he can speak in many ways, and in the Bible, he speaks in many ways. Sometimes people heard his voice audibly. Sometimes a prophet came who had spoken to God, and then God sent them the prophet. Sometimes God spoke through miracles. Sometimes the Holy Spirit just comes upon us and puts thoughts through our head. But what would be the purpose of dreams? Sometimes they're a prophetic missionary implications. God's calling somebody to a new ministry. Sometimes it helps individuals get out of a tough spot, such as the case with Abraham and Sarah. But I think mostly it provokes a Christian to ponder, reflect, seek counsel, and interact with other Christians to examine the meanings of things going on in their life. A dream can be external, something which has little to do with your personality, or it could be internal, something about your inner being. The fellow who started the organization Youth with a Mission had a dream one night where he saw waves of people spilling on to the shore. He started a ministry where he got college students. He put them on these luxury liners, and they sailed around the world being educated in evangelism and the Bible and the gospel. And then they'd stop in different countries, and the students would go out, and they'd go to shore, and they'd share the gospel. And then he'd come back on the boat and sail somewhere else and talk about what they learned. And he got all that from a dream of seeing bodies of people spilled up on shore. Now, when I say that a dream is internal and that you learn something about your inner being, well, here's my point. When we dream, we don't know we're dreaming, do we? I mean, sometimes the dream could be weirder than Alice in Wonderland, which was written about a girl who wakes up and finds out she was having a dream. You know, you wake up and you realize that at the beginning of the dream, you were with one person, that person turned into somebody else, and you were in one location, you ended up somewhere else, and there's just very little, if anything, about it that makes sense when we wake up and we wonder why we didn't figure out in the middle of the dream that we were dreaming. But we don't, do we? While we're dreaming, we think it's really happening. Now, that's interesting, because if we think it's really happening, we react in the way that we would have reacted had it really happened. Before soldiers go to battle, they go through field maneuvers. Dreams are even better than a field maneuver, because when a soldier is on a field maneuver, or an aviator, an Air Force pilot is with a flight simulator, he knows it's a simulator. He knows that it's not really happening. When we're dreaming, we think it's really going on. I was married when I was in my early 20s, and I had a dream that I came home one night late at night after a Bible study. We had a little townhouse, so there was an upstairs, downstairs. Walked into the house, and I heard somebody upstairs attacking my wife. Now, this never happened, but it did go on in a dream. And I had always wondered how I'd respond in a situation like that. Would I go in and try to stop the person, or would I behave like a coward? What would I do? Well, of course, I felt fear. Everybody feels fear. You know, it's wisdom to want to remove yourself from danger. But courage means, despite your fear, you do the right thing. And in this dream, I started darting up the stairs, ready to stop this man who was attacking my wife, not knowing if he had a gun or what. And then, of course, I woke up and I realized it was just a dream. But I said, oh, well, this is interesting. I've learned something about myself, because I didn't know I was dreaming. I guess given that kind of situation where somebody's being attacked, I guess I really would step in. Well, not long after I had that dream, this really happened. Not with my wife, but in a different way. But it was somebody being attacked. I was working at my church. I had a little office there. I was working, not late at night, but it was nighttime. It was after 8 o'clock. It was dark. And I heard somebody screaming. And it sounded like a teenage girl screaming. And at first you think, well, it's a couple of kids just playing and goofing around. But then it turned into this blood-curdling scream. And she shouted out, help me, please. Somebody help me. And I said, okay, God, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what if she's being attacked by one person or two. I don't know if they have any weapons, but as a Christian, I just can't sit here and ignore this. And I just ran in the direction of the scream. Sure enough, there was one guy, thankfully only one, but he did have this girl on the ground. He was twisting her arm behind her back in a way that was hurting her. She was screaming. There was an older couple across the street just staring, not doing anything. That is what most people do when these things happen, huh? They just stare. I ran up and I said, what's going on here? Fortunately, the guy got scared and he took off. And she did call the police and she did press charges. But isn't it interesting that I actually experienced that after I had my dream? I think my dream was a field maneuver. I think that was God's way of saying, this is by design. You are meant to do this. This did not happen randomly. This did not happen by chance. Okay, well then how do we go about interpreting a dream? First of all, we got to figure out if the dream came from God or not. Evaluate the likelihood that you would have dreamed this on your own. If you're dreaming about something, a lot of times I dream about something at night that I was thinking about that day. Or I had lunch with somebody and I dream about that person. But if I'm dreaming about people that I haven't seen in a long time, if something's happening to me in the dream, and I wake up and I can't think of anything that happened in my life the last day or perhaps the last week that would have contributed toward that, that increases the chance that the dream came from God. Does that automatically mean it came from God? No, of course not. But it does increase that chance. Another one is evaluate the frequency of the dream. If you keep having a repetitive dream, when I keep dreaming the same scenario, maybe it's a little different each time, but it's the same problem over and over and over again. After a while, it occurs to me that there may be something God's trying to tell me. If you dream about a person, speak to that person for confirmation. A few years later, when I was still married, my wife and I had a couple that was a friend of ours. I'm not going to give their names over the air, but there was a tension in our relationship. And I had a dream one night that the four of us went to the wild animal park. They call it the safari park now, probably for some politically correct reason. I don't know. But back then it was called the wild animal park. And I dreamed we were at the wild animal park. And while we were walking, I approached the husband and I said, you know, I'd just like to clear the air. There seems to be a problem. And I felt really good that I was clearing the air. Anyway, I wake up. I realize it was just a dream. And then my wife tells me that they called and they wanted us to go to the wild animal park with them. And I'm thinking, golly, I wonder what God has for me today at the wild animal park. And so I did talk to him. Anyway, I hope you found this interesting. There's more we could do about dreams in greater detail. Again, I had been hoping to have Tony Venuti on the whole time, but I think if you were trying to listen, you saw the problem. Generally, I will not let a guest come on unless they can do it from a landline. I found Tony so interesting, I was willing to try it. I said, just if you can plug your phone in, have it charging, sit in the same spot. But you know what? It still wasn't working. I should have listened to my better instincts. Well, all kinds of instincts. Next week on the Bob Siegel Show, we will see you then.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.